This is Insight on Cap Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. Wayne Wallace is a five-time Grammy nominee and an accomplished trombone player. His group, the Wayne Wallace Latin Jazz Quintet, just released a new record, The Rhythm of Invention. It received a 4-star review in Downbeat magazine. Wayne talked with Cap Radio jazz music director Gary Vercelli ahead of Wayne's upcoming performance for Jazz Night at the Crocker Art Museum.
I am a child of the 60s. I experienced everything, the peace, love thing. A couple of people that went to my local church were Black Panthers. I saw the Grateful Dead and Jefferson Airplane in some of their first performances out in Golden Gate Park by accident. Fillmore West and jazz clubs, Keystone Corner, Basin Street West, the Black Hawk, on and on. I was just born at the right time to catch some of those things in their upswing or their demise.
How did you get involved in both jazz and Latin music?
My elementary school, they offered music lessons to people, and they help you get the instrument. And I said I wanted to play trombone, and that started it all. The biggest influence was my parents had 2 Nat King Cole records and 2 Louis Jordan records. And that set the foundation for me, and I just kind of moved forward from there as far as jazz is concerned.
And then the salsa connection came later?
Yeah, it came much later. That came in the 80s, but in between there was this rhythm and blues phase where I was working with a lot of R&B people and work with Narda Michael Walden on Whitney Houston recordings, Earth, Wind & Fire, and Aretha Franklin. I worked with the great R&B band Confunction, things like that.
In the 1980s, I spent a lot of nights at Keystone Corner, but I always heard about this other club called Bajones. And then I read in some of your liner notes that some of your formative associations were made at Bajones. Take us back to that time and tell me, was it kind of a cooking pot of local talent?
Yes, it was. The Brazilian, jazz, salsa, Afro-Cuban scene all existed in that one club, and each genre would play on a separate night. And of course, we would go see each other play and sit in. A lot of the collaborations that happened were a direct result of Bajones existing simultaneously with Caesar's Latin Palace up the street. So Juan Valencia, Celia Cruz, Tito Puente, Johnny Pacheco, Oscar de Leon, all those people, the New York bands would come.
In those days, people were dancing to music provided by live musicians.
Yes, they were. As strange as it may seem to this day, yes, they were.
But things have transitioned quite a bit. Tell me about the scene here in San Francisco now. There seems to be a lack of energy or clubs the way there was in the 80s, from my perspective.
I agree, and I try to be pragmatic about it. And with the advent of, or the sprint to technology now, that part, we're in conflict as artists. You can either embrace the technology, fight it, or find the middle ground. You can't get away from it. And you have to think about more than gigs because there aren't enough clubs. I've been telling my students the last 3 or 4 years, you have to get grants, you have to perform at public libraries, you have to do commissions, you have the internet where you can do things with YouTube or whatever. But you have to promote yourself in a variety of ways. Those days, unless something radically changes, those days are gone. What is that, the Steely Dan tune? Those days are gone forever, over a long time ago, that one lyric. Every generation changes. People were sad with what happened after the 1940s, after bebop ended, and it moved into the 50s with rock and roll. And then there was complaints about the Beatles when they came along, on and on and on. Disco, take your pick. So you just, if you're an artist, you just adjust.
I'm Gary Vercelli. We're on Insight with Wayne Wallace. And Wayne, I want to talk about your latest album. There's a Eddie Palmieri composition, Vamonos Palmonte. Eddie's always been famous for his use of trombones in the band. Is that part of the appeal for including that composition?
Yep. Eddie's been a great influence. I have a lot of reverence that he took chances. He not only played jazz music, he played dance music. He wasn't afraid to take chances. He was one of those artists that set the edge.
Did a wonderful arrangement of Take Five from one of the best-selling albums of all time.
Yep.
What did you do with such a complex time signature to take it into the Latin realm?
Well, that's a funny story. I found this recording of Tito doing Take Five, but he did it in 4-4. And I went, oh, well, Tito did that because he was playing for dancers. He wanted to make sure they could dance to it. And I went, well, I guess I'm going to try to do it in five. Instead of a clave pattern, we synthesized a 5-4 pattern for the main body of the song. The other thing I thought, just to make it a little different, on the original Dave Brubeck recording, nobody solos on the bridge. I wanted to make sure we actually use the chord changes, and Mary Fedick plays a brilliant solo through that. It's just I didn't want to disrespect the original intent of the song, because its genius is in its simplicity. So I just wanted to add things to it, but not take away from what Paul Desmond and Dave Brubeck had done on the song.
I want to ask you about a couple of your own original compositions. There's a cha-cha-cha called Playa Negra.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell me a little bit about that.
I was inspired. I went to Costa Rica, and there's a beach there called Playa Negra. That part of Costa Rica, there's a space there called Limon, L-I-M-O-N. And I went and sat in with a band there. They played Cuban salsa, reggae, soul music from Gamble and Huff, like Teddy Pendergrass, and everything in between. And I just went, I've met the musical nexus of the Caribbean. And I just went, okay, so it's a black beach, etc., Playa Negra. I was like, okay, that'll work.
Talk about education these days. There's the Berklee College of Music. There's where you teach. In Sacramento, we've got a lot of really good high school programs.
Yeah.
I think the missing element from my perspective is the kids are getting a good education, but they're not getting that interaction like when you were playing in salsa clubs and really kind of seeing what your music does to people dancing.
I have an ongoing saying, the best thing that ever happened to jazz is jazz education, and the worst thing that ever happened to jazz is jazz education. It's so difficult to take an organic process and then try to write it down and teach it a certain way. The Coltranes, the Parkers, the Gillespies, take your pick, found their voices by actively playing and exploring. And that's the challenge we're having now as educators, is to keep that intact, but put it in a form so it works within the academic setting. And I actively talk to my students as, take everything you need here, whether it's the vocabulary, the experience, and the mentorship, but find your own voice.
You're a man who appreciates the space between notes, I think.
Yes, I do.
And so many times I get an album from a young, promising musician, and it sounds like they're trying to play everything they know and put it on display. But they need to take a breath, I think, right?
You know what? You can listen to people talk like that on television. I mean, usually your instrument is an extension of your voice. And if you think about Ben Webster, the older players, and there's another good story about that. It's Dexter Gordon. Somebody asked him to play a tune, and he thought for a second, I can't play that song. I don't know the lyrics to it. I think that says it all. There's a lot of tunes where people know the heads, but they don't know the lyrics, and they can't really tell the story. As a soloist in the 40s, if you couldn't do that, you didn't work. That's what they didn't like about the beboppers. They weren't telling stories. That was a clash between the swing musicians and the Charlie Parker and Dizzy Gillespie, even though they had grown up on that tradition. You know the story, like Charlie Parker getting gonged and stuff at those jam sessions, because he was experimenting. So old school versus new school, how do we move forward? How is it accepted and not accepted? It's an ongoing thing. But to answer your question about jazz academia, there's more jazz schools now giving out degrees than when I started by 100, 200 times. And God bless them. I mean, it keeps the genre happening, but sure is a tough struggle with the lack of clubs to play at and actually get that visceral experience and feedback from an audience. And that's the other thing. I really believe there's a synergy between an audience and the performers that is a circle where they become one. And you look at what Cuban musicians have done. The times I went to Cuba, that was the epitome of it. The audience would make a dance move, the band would react to the dance move, the arranger would look at how the dancers were dancing, create a new rhythm or a different phrasing in a song to work with the dancers. It's this ongoing game. And I've been carrying that with me all along.
Trombonist and band leader Wayne Wallace with Cap Radio's Gary Vercelli earlier this month. The new album by the Wayne Wallace Latin Jazz Quintet is The Rhythm of Invention. He will perform at the Crocker Art Museum for Jazz Night on Thursday, July 25th, and we have ticket information at capradio.org/insight. And that's Insight for today. I'm Beth Ruyak. Insight is produced by Cody Drabble and Kate Gonzalez. Our digital team is Chris Hagen, Casey Gardner, and Emily Zentner. We had help from Helen Barrington and Antonio Munez. Our technical director is Mark Jones. Insight's executive producer is Joe Barr. Thanks for joining us.